Well, Sham, Saran, welcome to the Lowy Institute. I'd like to start by taking you forward to tomorrow's Harry's lecture that you're delivering for us, in which you lay out, I think, a fairly ambitious path for India's place in the region and in the world. From an outsider's perspective, someone who watches India but is not an India expert, it looks as if there are two big constraints to India playing a more influential global role. One is its economic development, which is rapid and impressive in many ways, but still far behind other developing states such as China. And the second one is that India has such persistent problems on its borders, which means it has to keep a security focus very much close to home. Can these challenges be overcome?
Well, I certainly hope so. I think as far as the first issue that you mentioned, which is the question of economic capacity, which is really the basis for any kind of role that India can play. The recent trends have been quite positive because today, as you know, India is the fastest growing large economy in the world, having overtaken China. It's now about 7.5% GDP growth. And if India is able to maintain this trajectory, then one can see India emerging as probably the third largest economy in the world in nominal terms, as well as in purchasing power parity terms by about 2050 or so. So the trajectory is towards India emerging as a country with very major economic capabilities. And that is the foundation for any kind of regional or global role that India can play. And with respect to the second question, yes, that is a very difficult challenge. But again, I think one of the new trends in India's foreign policy is the recognition that India needs to do a much better job of managing its own periphery. Without that, it is difficult to see how we can break out of the constraint that you mentioned. Now, in that respect, what in other contexts is seen as perhaps a liability, that is, a very large size of India compared to its smaller neighbors, in fact, that can become an asset. Can India use the very size of its economy, the dynamism of its economy, to give its own neighbors a stake in its own prosperity? Can it become the driver of economic change, of prosperity for the entire region? The hope is that if we can do that, then many of the sharp edges which are currently there in our relations with our neighbors, hopefully those will be overcome, and there will be a greater alignment in terms of interest between India and its neighbors. That's not a given. That requires very, very careful diplomacy, a lot of engagement with our neighbors. But I think the trend is in that direction.
Certainly not a given. And in fact, the economic relationship with Pakistan at present, as I understand it, is anemic.
Well, it is anemic if you look at the formal trade figures. But it is not so anemic if you take into account the informal trade which takes place, a lot of it through Singapore, a lot of it through Dubai, Kuwait. If you add all that up, actually, there is a fairly substantial trade relationship. If tomorrow you were only able to bring this indirect trade into the bilateral trade figures, it actually will look quite impressive. But yes, the major constraint in the developing the economic complementarities between India and Pakistan continues to be the political issue. And the good news is that despite those political constraints, actually trade has increased as much as we see it has. If those political constraints were somehow overcome, there is no reason why the trade and economic relationship should not really expand very, very rapidly.
So then, do you see this economic strategy that you talk about as a way to more or less bypass the endemic and entrenched strategic and border disputes with Pakistan, or is this a path towards achieving reconciliation?
Well, it cannot be the only answer. It has to be a component of a larger strategy of reaching out to our neighbors. And it's not only with respect to Pakistan. I think this is an issue with respect to other neighbors as well. That is, we should, of course, engage much more deeply with these neighboring countries. There should be high-level political engagement. Mr. Modi, I think, did very well to bring the focus back on the neighborhood by very early visits to all the South Asian capitals. The issue here is not so much whether you know, increased trade and economic relations can be the only answer, but that in the toolbox that we have to deal with our neighbors, this will be an very important aspect. India, because it is liberalizing, India, which is globalizing, needs to make South Asia a part of that globalization process. That's the important message, because for a time there was a sense that we could bypass South Asia and link up with you know, the very dynamic Southeast Asia and the Far East, mm-hmm. and perhaps the US and the West. We need not worry so much about our relations with the South Asian neighbors. I think the big change that has taken place over the last several years is a recognition that you cannot bypass South Asia, that South Asia needs to be part and parcel of India's globalization process.
So let's talk about India's big neighbor, China. When I traveled to India early this year, I got the sense that the Indian strategic community is really worried about China's rise and is openly talking about China's rise in ways that you don't hear in Australia, even though that feeling of concern is below the surface. How do you describe the tenor of the Indian debate about China?
It should come as no surprise that if there is one country which impinges most directly on India's strategic space, it is China. The complexity arises from the fact that India is rising at the same time that China is rising, maybe not to the same extent. But in fact, this is a kind of a parallel process which is taking place. Therefore, managing it is even more difficult than would normally be the case. But I think the Indian approach to China is perhaps not very different from the approach even Australia would have adopted, which is to see what are the areas in which India can constructively engage with China. Are there areas where the two countries have certain convergent interests? And there are certain convergent interests that we can build upon. But at the same time, recognize that we have an unresolved border issue with China. Also, an issue of China's activities in our own neighborhood. In particular with Pakistan, there is a history of China trying to use Pakistan as some kind of a proxy against India. So these are realities, ground realities. So in any kind of an approach to China, it will have to be a mix. How do you manage the relationship? By building upon those convergences, by building upon the positive aspects of the relationship, but at the same time, make certain that you have the ability to confront China if there is a threat to your own interests. Mm.
Let's turn to Australia-India relations. In the last, well, let's say 20 or 30 years, at least as long as I've been following Australian politics, every new Australian government seems to come to power with big plans to upgrade the India relationship, and yet it never seems to happen. But are things different now?
I think things are different for the simple reason that on the one hand, India's profile is moving eastward. Australia's profile is moving westwards. So there is a certain kind of a mutual recognition of common interests, which perhaps was not so obvious in the past. There is this large ocean space between our two countries, a large ocean space which is very vital to the economic prosperity of both Australia as well as India. And so there is a recognition that we need to work together, and perhaps with other partners as well, to make certain that this remains a ocean space of peace, of security, of supporting ocean-borne trade, which is so vital to both our countries. So there is a certain strategic convergence which is beginning to manifest itself, and that is a very important basis on which the relationship can be built. Taking also, of course, advantages of other affinities which are there between our two countries, which have been there even earlier, whether it is the English language, whether it is, you know, our fascination with cricket, or whether it is our membership of the Commonwealth. These are all very important affinities, which will only reinforce the kind of new strategic convergence which is emerging between the two of us.
Does Australia need to accept that this will inevitably be an asymmetric relationship, that we will want India's attention more than vice versa?
No, I don't think that India looks upon this as a kind of a major league and minor league kind of a relationship. I think Australia is a very large country, even though it has a small population. It has very important economic capabilities as well as security capabilities. So I don't think India is looking upon Australia as some minor partner, which perhaps very low down on our list of priorities. I don't think that's the way to look at the relationship. I think what we need to understand is that there is a certain asymmetry at this point of time because of the fact that, say, in terms of the market, obviously the Indian market is a very large market, and we hope that Australia and Australian companies would be attracted to that market. For example, in terms of the export basket from India, Australia is not going to be a very large market in terms of our export markets. There are areas where we will need to build, where those are the kind of niche areas that we must locate and build upon. To give you an example, I mean, Singapore is a country of only 6 million people. And yet, it is one of India's most important economic partners. Why? Because it has, you know, tried to build itself as a platform for Indian companies to access the rest of the region. So, I think it is an issue of finding out what are the areas where Australia has advantages which other countries do not have in terms of being a partner to India. Of course, many people say that the resource relationship is going to be the most important relationship between the two countries. Perhaps that might be the case. Others would say that there are areas in terms of technology which India would be very interested in. For example, water management. Australia has great strengths in arid zone agriculture, which is something which is of great interest to India. So I think the importance lies in trying to locate those areas where India can be of interest to Australia, and what are the areas where, you know, Australia can offer to India strengths that it has which others do not possess. I think that's the way to go about it.
Shamsaran, thanks for your time.
Thank you.